Welcome back to the Project Centered Show on Pacifica Radio. I am Nolan Higdon in studio with my co-host Desiree McSwain. And we're going to continue this conversation, talking to different movements from the millennial generation here. We're going to talk to Quentin Sankofa. Quentin is a collective member of Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project. He is on a variety of Movement Generation's program teams, including the Black Land and Liberation Initiative and the Earth Skills Program. Quentin was born in a poor, racially segregated neighborhood on the east side of Cleveland, Ohio. Quentin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So what can you tell our audience about Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project?
Concisely, as you mentioned, we are a collective of 8 individuals. Most of us come from various movement sectors. We kind of think of ourselves as some of the wounded warriors who have been kind of navigating the nonprofit industrial complex and our political work at the same time. But we've come to Movement Generation around this idea of ecological justice, given the moment of time that we're in with rising social inequality and also the collapse of our ecosystem. So we're kind of centered around those two lines of inquiry, understanding our ecosystems and our social movements and what social movements can learn from ecology.
About how old is the Movement Generation Project?
I happen to be part of a second wave in the collective. Our core founders, might argue about the actual date because it depends on how they view it as when they came into it. But I think we're all in general agreement that it kind of has its origins in about 2007. So after Hurricane Katrina in 2005, a group of activists and organizers in the Bay Area began to meet and think strategically about climate change and the environment and saying that we needed to pay much more attention to it. And so some of those early conversations led to Jason Negron Gonzalez and Mateo Nube hosting a strategy conversation retreat for activists and organizers in the Bay Area. And they did that up at Occidental Arts and Ecology Center in 2007. And at that point, we weren't called Movement Generation, but that's kind of like what gave birth to the organization.
Quentin, this is Desiree McSwain. I know that you are originally from Cleveland, Ohio, but you guys are based in the Bay Area now. Can you talk about the differences and maybe some of the similarities that you see in movements between Bay Area and Cleveland as far as the work that you're doing and also a lot of what you're hearing from the community and what they're saying that they need?
Yeah, thanks. That's a really interesting question. You know, so much of organizing has to do with culture, right? And every place has its own unique culture, and there's, you know, different cultures nested within bigger cultures or whatnot. So for me, as a person of African descent, you know, I'm always in organizing spaces with other Black folks. And it's very interesting, you know, it's just very interesting just because of dynamics like growing up in the Midwest where, you know, for folks who might not go to the Midwest a lot, it's one of the most segregated areas of our country. You know, people have this fantasy myth about the South and segregation and racism and oppression, which certainly because a lot of Black folks live in the South, we, experience that racism at a different scale. But up north, we also have large numbers and are very segregated, right? So the segregation is interesting because, for example, in Cleveland, on paper, you know, it looks pretty diverse, right? It's like 50% white, 50% Black, but literally 90% of all Black people live on one side of the town. And that's the town I grew up in, on the east side of Cleveland. So in terms of like organizing, multiracial organizing, you know, coalition building is much more of a challenge, I think, in the Midwest than in a place like Oakland to have a real history of multiracial organizing, even though there's been great movements that have been, you know, centered on various populations, you know, obviously like the Black Panther Party. So for me, I think that's one of the big things, just like the demographics of the place changes the nature of the organizing and the culture. And there's a whole bunch of other things that go along with that. Like I find like being in the South and being in the Midwest, but particularly the South, it's a lot more singing and organizing. It's a lot more cultural work that happens kind of like just as a matter of fact, right? And I think like what I've seen in the Bay Area is a little bit more intellectual, academic, at least in this moment of styles of organizing. But I think young activists are very interested in bringing that kind of community building spirit of song, dance, culture back to organizing in the Bay Area. Certainly that I'm not trying to say that it's not present at all, but when I'm traveling through the South, like song and culture and dance and music is just so much embedded in the way people organize. that they just do it kind of as a habit. And I think here in the Bay Area, we have to be mindful of it and be more intentional about it, because I feel like sometimes we, you know, don't center it in our organizing.
You talked about the multiracial aspect in organizing. Is your collective multiracial? Is it a Black movement?
Movement Generation for sure is a multiracial organization, and that's how we roll as a collective. However, when it comes to Black Land and Liberation Initiative, we're actually in a deep partnership with an all-Black direct action training group called the Blackout Collective, because in no way, shape, or form does Movement Generation have any business solely running a Black Land and Liberation Initiative, right? So what we're struggling with and thinking through is, as a multiracial organization who has, you know, Black leadership represented by me and some of our allies on our planning committee, we know that we have to be in deep relationship with Black formations for this project. So MG, Movement Generation, is multiracial. Blackout Collective is all Black. And the Black Liberation and Land Initiative is a Black organizing space as well.
Quentin, tell our listeners, where can they go to find out more about Movement Generation and some of the other organizations you've been talking about?
Yeah, so Movement Generation does have a website, movementgeneration.org. Blackout Collective also has a website, blackout.org, I believe. It might be blackoutcollective.org. And then, we have social media presence, both of those organizations. We're both on Facebook. You can find Movement Generation on Facebook. We have a page, and we're on Twitter. You can find us at MoveGen on Twitter. And, yeah, you can visit our website.
I am Nolan Higdon. You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio, and I am in studio with my co-host, Desiree McSwain, and we are talking to Quentin Sankofa of the Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project. Quentin, can you tell our listeners, in the contemporary climate, why is an organization like Movement Generation Justice and Ecology so important?
Well, I'll say it from my perspective. You know, we are, again, a collective of 8 individuals, and we get to bring our whole selves to this organization, so we're not necessarily an issue-based group of people. And so I say that because each one of us has a different response to that question, right? So I just speak from my personal experience. I'm just going to take you back to 2005. I was in undergrad at Michigan State University studying urban and regional planning. I was taking a geography course. It was my senior year. And the first week of the course, it's August, late August, and the professor is like, hey, you know, we're going to talk about weather and weather patterns and things like this. And as we got into the course, he started talking about climate change, and he started talking about a storm that was brewing off the coast in the Gulf of Mexico. And he was saying that the waters in the Gulf of Mexico were unusually warm at that time because it had been a very hot year, and due to climate change, the water temperatures have been rising. And he said that that warm water could strengthen a storm into a hurricane, and if it made landfall around New Orleans, it could be devastating. And so I started to pay attention when he said that, because I've been in New Orleans as a radical Black activist. I know the importance of New Orleans to the history of my liberation and the liberation of our people. I have been there, loved the place, loved the culture, loved the people. So I began to kind of watch that storm develop into what we all know as Hurricane Katrina. And in that moment, it was kind of like the first time for me as an activist to say, wow, climate change is not just about melting ice caps and polar bears. Actually, this is about our people and our survival. I saw climate change and the disruption of our ecosystem meet the racism and the oppression, and I saw that collision, and I had not too many places to explore that with, right? Like, the Black organizations on campus I was working with, they were very much interested in justice and student organizing on campus around issues around race and sexism and things like that. And then the environmental groups that I was kind of like peeking into, who have been talking about climate change, were pretty much all white with no analysis around oppression. And so I really didn't have a space where I could have both conversations, right? From 2005 on to 2010, I yearned for that conversation, but never found myself in a space that would allow both. And then in 2010, while at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, I had the privilege to meet Carla Paredes from Movement Generation. She invited me to the Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Retreat, which happens up at Afro-Dona Arts and Ecology Center. By this time, I had already moved to Oakland. And so, you know, I decided to take her up on her offer because she told me, like, this is a place that people are going to talk about racism and climate change and ecology and nature and reclaiming our relationship to land and the ecosystems. And I was, like, all about it. I was like, yeah, I've been wanting to have this conversation. So I say all of that to say that I think one of the most important reasons that our group exists is because we're able to wrap these conversations together and not look at them as separate, but to really have a holistic view around ecosystems and people and our relationship and social movement.
What's your experience been thus far with Movement Generation? Have you had a, say, easier time now having these discussions, pointing out the intersection of racial justice and environmental justice, or has it been difficult? How would you describe it?
I think part of what I appreciate about Movement Generation is we've been able to have a sharp analysis around these things that speaks to our people, that speaks to mass movement. And I would like to say that I believe we've been a part of a shift in consciousness around this issue. So, for example, in 2010, I wasn't having many conversations about climate justice or eco-justice, or not, I wasn't even hearing those phrases. But I believe that because of groups like Movement Generation, like the Climate Justice Alliance, and all of our allies in those movements, and of course the movements in the Global South as well, rural movements like the Landless Peasants Movement in Brazil or like the MST, I think we've been able to highlight these issues in a way that allows people to be more receptive to hear them. And then, of course, just to be real, there's been a ton of things that have happened that are big ecological catastrophes since Hurricane Katrina. People who experienced Sandy on the East Coast, I mean, understanding that phenomenon has also propelled people to really think about climate justice, I think. So I feel like because of those events that I've been able to have different conversations with people.
Quentin, can you speak to the relationship that MG has to low-income communities, primarily communities of color, black and brown youth, and how they relate to their food injustices and food deserts that they have around? Because I know that you talk a lot about black land, talking restoration of land, labor, and culture. How do you guys relate, or how do you see that issue?
It's multifaceted for sure. I think what's important for us is that our analysis calls for us to lead with vision, right? And be visionary and oppositional in our fight. And I think young people are really attracted to visionary thinking and visionary organizing. And in fact, I think they help create it. So for us, there's since work with young people and having intergenerational spaces is a very important thing for us. So we create a lot of different events and programs and spaces where folks are in dialogue with community. And we know that every aspect of our community, from young to old, has wisdom and knowledge to share, because we're all experiencing this thing called life together. And for us, it's all about the production of life, which is the basis of our economy, right? Like, how do we produce life? How do we produce home? How do we manage home? So for us, I think young people are at the center point of that conversation, because really it's their world to inherit. I mean, it's our responsibility as adults to prepare a pathway for them to kind of like live out their full potential. So a lot of things that we do speak to young people. It's real hard to, you know, intellectualize everything to the point where it's at an academic level. I mean, you have to spend 4 or 5 years unpacking ideas and things like that, which is cool and necessary. But if you can't make those ideas translate to young people who are going to be the ones that take those ideas and actually add value to those ideas and actually make them real, then I think we're missing something.
You're listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Nolan Higdon, in studio with my co-host, Desiree McSwain. We'll be back after this musical break. Talking to Quentin Sankofa of Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project. And Quentin, you were talking about the importance of young people, and we do a lot of work studying media, and the media narrative is often that young people sort of don't care or checked out, not paying attention to these critical issues. So what's been your experience? Are young people increasingly active in the various movements in which you're involved? Are they engaged? What would you say about young people you're currently working with?
I don't know where this line of thinking comes from. You know that young people aren't engaged or young people aren't involved. I don't know, man. You know, people get older and get bitter. I don't know. I don't understand it. I've never seen a social movement that wasn't started and maintained and pushed by young people. So I don't understand that. But from what I see, young people are out here leading the way, and they're leading the way in a big way. I mean, the things that are coming out the Movement for Black Lives with a whole new cadre of young people coming into their own consciousness and pushing boundaries in beautiful ways, like making sure that the folks who are the most oppressed and most exploited are put at the center of our movement is such a revolutionary idea that didn't come from the generation before us in mass, right? Even though that generation was led by young people too. But I think all of these social movements are always going to be led by young people, point blank, period. That's just, yeah, to me, that's just like how life works. You know, like young people come up into systems and structures, they challenge and refine those systems and structures, and the cycle continues. So I wish we could put to bed this idea that young people aren't interested, motivated, or active.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that. So can you tell our listeners, what are some of the specific projects you're involved in right now, and any details about those projects as well?
Well, we're involved in a number of projects. We were talking a little bit about the Black Land and Liberation Initiative earlier, and that's a phenomenal project that we are developing with the Blackout Collective that a lot of people have found great interest in. That program is really about training up activists, black activists across the country, primarily around nonviolent direct action skills, you know, strategies and tactics, and also an understanding of land-based skills, helping folks understand the role of ecology and how to create certain things, composting toilets, gray water systems, rainwater catchment systems, things like that. And then also having a deep kind of like strategy piece around situating ourselves in this movement right now as black activists, you know, seeing ourselves as a continuation of a movement that started long before us, and kind of situating that in this new paradigm with the new tools that are available for organizing and strategy and thinking and doing. So that's one edge of our work. We have other edges of our work as well. Brooke Anderson of Movement Generation, along with her organizing committee, run a program that we have there called Climate Workers, which is an effort to kind of push labor past the whole dynamic around jobs versus the environment and take them into a radical position around what we might say jobs for the environment, right? And so that's a very interesting piece that she's spearheading. We also do some cultural work, and we have an analysis that says, and it's not ours, you know, but it's like a movement thing, right? Like that we have to broadcast a transformative narrative, right? Like we have to tell our own stories, and we have to be visionary enough to put our people in positions where they see themselves in the new economy. They see themselves in a new paradigm. And so we have some cultural productions that we do, one of which is in production right now is a web series called The North Pole, which is just a really nice seven-part web series, comedic drama that Josh Healy at Movement Generation has written and developed with the outstanding creative team. And the idea of that show is it follows three North Oakland residents. For folks that don't know, old school North Oakland residents called North Oakland the North Pole, and youngsters coming up will call themselves polar bears. This is way before the climate change conversation. And so we're using that metaphor to explore gentrification and climate change. And so that's a really interesting series that's going to be released this spring as well. So we're just pushing the edge. You know, as a nonprofit, people don't think you're supposed to do those types of things, right? Like, who knows of a climate justice organization that's producing their own media like that, also engaged in labor organizing and also engaged in radical black organizing. Like, we're trying to wrap this movement around ourselves.
You spoke a little bit about gentrification, and I was actually going to ask you about your perspective on that, coming again from Cleveland, Ohio, and coming into the Bay Area, which in a lot of people's opinion is the height of gentrification in Oakland, California specifically, and then West Oakland specifically, even deeper, but, you know, San Francisco, all these areas. But what is your perspective? Is it the same? Do you feel like this is just an issue in all, you know, brown and black communities?
This is an issue wherever capitalism is. Capitalism exists, unfortunately, in every corner of this world at this moment. So, yeah, certain expressions of it and, you know, historically oppressed communities are going to look similar and different, but it's a problem everywhere because it's just a continuation of colonialism and imperialism and amid the white supremacy. So as long as you have a economy that's structured on private land ownership, then we're going to have problems with gentrification. That's just the point blank piece of it. So yeah, it looks a little different in Oakland just because it's at a scale and a pace that's different than in Cleveland. But you know, we've been dealing with these issues around segregation and power and domination, you know, since the beginning of this country. So to me, it's just another version of it. It's kind of like the way as black people, we were locked out of the suburbs when we were crammed into inner cities, but now we are being locked out of inner cities and crammed into third ring suburbs. So to me, it's just a continuation of the age-old issue, and that issue to me never gets addressed and never will get addressed until we deal with the private property question. Because like as a city, for example, right, like a city like Oakland is a municipality dependent on a strong tax base. They have a contradiction. They are tasked with providing goods and services for their population that require resources, and a big part of that resource is property tax. So for them, seeing a rising tax base actually is a good thing for them. But the contradiction is you have a whole city of people who need housing. They need affordable housing, which is not the most lucrative thing for developers. So we pay our tax dollars to city officials who then do sweetheart deals with developers to bring jobs and all these other things, which is false because what they're doing is extracting profit out of communities. They're not bringing jobs. They're using people to extract wealth out of communities. That's what really happens. So anyway, I think it's a fundamental problem around private property and land speculation. And until we address that, we'll have various forms of gentrification that take place or displacement in general.
So, Quentin, in our final question here, could you speak to some of our listeners who may want to get involved or replicate some of the work that you're already doing? Where can they go? What websites? Who can they contact? What would you recommend that they do?
I think they should continue to listen to shows like this and continue to challenge their own thinking. And I think getting out into your community and listening to folks who are historically oppressed and taking direction and guidance from them is great. And in terms of like just institutional support, if you happen to be in the Bay Area, don't take it for granted, because my travel across the country and our culture around organizing and progressive values is special. And of course, we have things to work out and we're not perfect or anything like that. But you have access to some of the most brilliant, organized groups in the country right here. Groups like Cause of Who's to Just Cause. I spoke about Blackout Collective earlier. Groups like APEN, groups like Urban Tilt in Richmond, Acting on Verba in East Oakland, Poder in San Francisco. There's just a wealth of organizations. And I would just say reach out to them. If you're on a national tip, you can go to the Climate Justice Alliance website. That is a organizing vehicle that Movement Generation helped co-create with other groups like Grassroots, like GGJ. Point is, you're in the Bay Area. You have lots of access to radical thinkers and doers. Get to know some of them.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the time.